computer.
Our first 7 p.m. Zen Talk.
Yes. So welcome. Happy Wednesday.
Correct.
Wednesday, hump day. This is, as Kathy says, this is the first time we've ever done it at night. We're more daytime players, but because I've been traveling a lot, we're doing it at nighttime. So we're hoping to get some fresh faces, some new faces, and some previously seen faces. I was going to say old faces, but we wouldn't want to say
that. No, and fresh faces is
because I see some. Look at Liz. I see her. And there's Lindsay right there. It looks like she's still at work. Does Lindsay live at work?
No, she's not at work.
Isn't she a teacher?
Well, yeah, but she's
it's the same background as usual.
Oh.
So anyways,
it's your place.
So here's the deal. I do know that I think there's at least a few. I want to say hi to everybody. There's somebody named K8. I don't know what K8 stands
Kate.
For. So
it's KB.
Oh, duh, Kate. And Teresa's here, and Peggy, and Liz, and Lindsay, and Karen, and Kelsey, and somebody from the old 615.
615, baby.
So this is Zen Talk number 37. I don't know. But for the newbies, we have a few different ways that you can communicate with us. One is that there's a chat box. So I actually just typed on the chat, testing, are you guys out there? So if you feel like it, you can just say, we're out here, or we hear you, Todd, or something like that. If you have a question, you can literally raise your hand if we can see you, or if you put the pointer over your face, then you can...
You'll see three dots.
You'll see three dots. Thank you, sweetie. And it'll give you the opportunity to raise your hand that way. Or you can just do it in the chat box. So the way this works is I have a few questions right here and right here, double-sided to save paper because we love trees.
Yes.
And
I got my nails painted.
But I am a bigger fan of actual live interaction. Mm-hmm. And you're like, duh, but there's some people out there that are new, so they may not know that. So
are you recording?
Yeah, good. I think so.
All right. Yes, yes, yes. You are.
So if anybody is out there and wants to ask a question, go ahead and raise your hand. I'm going to type in right now, who has a question, and see who wants to join us.
Did you hear me say I got my nails painted?
Congratulations.
Thanks.
Pink.
I know, but you were in the middle and I said, I got my nails painted and you said yes and then kept talking.
I'm trying to do too many things.
Are you trying to work and I'm not?
Us men are not good at multitasking, but you ladies out there, you ladies know how to multitask like the best of them.
Stereotypes.
One quick thing. I was doing for my work, I was interviewing some candidates for a position. I haven't told you this story yet.
Okay.
And it was this one friend of mine, a dear friend, her name is Kim, and like six other men. One of the men was the candidate being interviewed.
Okay.
So about 45 minutes in, she stood up, and I thought she was standing up to stretch, or I don't know if her back was bothering her. And she's like, I was so mad, and I stood up. Do you know why? I'm like, I have no idea. And it's because the candidate and one of the people that never made eye contact with her.
Happens all the time. When you and I are in a meeting at a bank,
yeah,
or like somewhere that we're conducting business, the person usually looks at you the whole time. Now, what's interesting, what I've noticed is when we're in a teacher meeting,
mm-hmm,
or when we're
it's
in something that's
around.
Emotional, they only look at me.
So
it's unconscious. It's very interesting.
Right. I don't think either of these two men were evil. I think it's an unconscious bias,
mm-hmm,
against women.
Mm-hmm.
And I will also say that I try to be somebody who is aware of that type of stuff.
Mm-hmm.
No clue.
Mm-hmm.
I had no idea.
Yeah. And I actually used to, this is going to be so random, but I remember talking to you about this a couple years ago. There came a point when my dad wasn't doing really well,
mm-hmm,
and we would be in conversation like with whoever was in the room. And I would say to you, you're not making eye contact with my dad,
mm,
because he wasn't really responding. You
right.
know what I
he
mean?
Wasn't good at responding. At
right.
The time.
He wasn't good at responding. And I would be like, look at him too. Like, don't just talk to my mom. Like, look at him, too.
And the obvious reason why is because this man who had lost a lot of,
yeah,
his abilities,
yeah,
is still there.
Absolutely.
Still listening. He just can't reflect back what I'm saying.
And he was looking at you.
I know.
So I kind of wanted, and you totally did it. Like, yeah, this isn't, we talked about this ages ago.
Yeah.
But there's these things that we sometimes do when we're in communication with people where we forget, like, I think we sometimes do this at dinners where we talk over our kids' heads,
mm-hmm,
or we are, you know, talking to, and again, I kind of already brought up the situations that Todd and I are in, but you know, if it's, we sometimes don't acknowledge all the people that are involved. Yep. We just acknowledge the person that we think is the decision maker or our unconscious bias of who we think the decision maker is. Mm-hmm. And we forget that everybody in the room is there for a reason.
Yeah.
And again, there's, it's less about judgment because we all do it and more about, it's a good wake up call.
Well, and I thought it was a kind of a cool way for her to kind of, I don't know, protest or speak up without like destroying the whole interview process.
Yes.
Like, hey, I'm in the room. Because she's probably the smartest one of the bunch, including me.
Because otherwise you have to do this. And I've done that before where I've kind of leaned into you. Mm. So like I'm in the screen. And Kate, you're right. My nails do match my shirt. My toes do too.
I didn't notice that.
My nails match my shirt.
I know.
There's things that we can do or we can make sounds like, you know, like not in a like smart alecky way, but there are things we can do, but it sucks for the person that's not being looked at mm-hmm. too, because like, you know, the times that you and I have done work related things or gone to the bank, they very rarely look at me.
I know. And that's a problem.
Correct.
As they make eye contact. And I did find out this is different, but if you toast somebody in Europe, if you don't make eye contact
yes.
with them, it's 7 years of bad sex.
Bad sex, really? Well, my girlfriend's...
No, it's bad sex.
Who, Megan, who goes to Europe a lot, whenever we toast, she's like, no.
Yeah.
She's always big on making eye contact.
And I don't know if that's true. A guy told me that, but I believe it. Those Europeans, they know a lot about sex.
I thought you can say bad luck.
No, that's a mirror. You're thinking of a mirror.
I'm not thinking of a mirror.
Yes.
Okay, let's go.
So, last thing, I'm going to read this question, but this is a kind of a community, and I'm sure everybody, including me,
they'll come in
are challenged.
They'll come in.
And this is your opportunity to say, hey, I'm challenged, Todd and Kathy and the rest of the team, please help me with this challenge. I'm going to read this question, but I hope that we can get some live interaction.
It's all good. They're here. This is where you have to.
I know, but we could be recording. Forget it.
No.
I have a 4.5-year-old. This is from one of our teammates who was not able to get on today. I have a 4.5-year-old, and I struggle with her when she's either writing or doing some artwork. If she does anything wrong or makes a mistake, she goes into meltdown mode.
Mm-hmm.
She refuses to do anything else and won't listen to any prompting. I allow her to have her feelings, and I have been talking to her about how art is never wrong.
Mm-hmm.
We also introduced a book titled Beautiful Oops.
We have that book.
We do?
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
We have
actually three copies, one in each room.
I've missed each one of those.
You've read Beautiful Oops. You've just forgotten what it looks like. It's the one where it shows a picture of if you drop something, it looks like this, but then it can become something else. I'll show it. It's in Skyler's room. I'll show it to you.
Nothing. It's not even nothing. While all this is helping, the beautiful oops and feeling your feelings, I have a really hard time putting this much pressure on herself.
Mm-hmm.
I'm hoping it's a phase and it will pass, but how can I help her be more confident in the mistakes?
Mm-hmm.
So let me take the first whack at it. First and most obvious thing, she's 4.5.
Right.
Very typical.
Right.
She gets frustrated. She colors outside the lines, whatever
throws
it is.
Throws a crayon.
Very normal behavior. So I want to normalize this. And, you know, this little 4.5-year-old, I think daughter, yes, her, is still figuring out how to deal with this. Mm-hmm. So just be cool with it. You're already doing this, but I need to reinforce it. Validate her feelings mm-hmm. and say, I hear you, instead of telling her why she shouldn't be mm-hmm. upset. The bottom line is she is upset for whatever reason. Mm-hmm. So say, I see that you're upset. That she can always ask mom for help mm-hmm. if she wants to,
yep.
specifically within the art project or helping her find the names of her feelings or whatever. So like, just so this 4.5-year-old knows that she has some support. And that these mistakes are how we learn.
Mm-hmm.
And that goes back to the beautiful oops is this is kind of how we do it. And then lastly, tell them stories about your own mistakes and how you learn from them.
You're going to do purple turkey, aren't you?
Oh, yes.
Todd's going to tell the purple turkey story.
So I was in kindergarten, we had a Thanksgiving turkey, just plain white paper with a black outline of a turkey. And my favorite color is purple. And we know that because we have these butterflies in our kitchen yesterday.
Mm-hmm.
We grew them from
caterpillars.
We grew them from caterpillars and they blossomed into butterflies. And we all got to name our own caterpillar.
Mm-hmm. Calipitter.
Calipitter.
That's how our girls used to say
and
it.
And I got to decide the name for my caterpillar, and it was Purple Barnaby. Mm-hmm. Purple because it's my favorite color. Barnaby's because it's my favorite pizza place in Chicago called Purple Barnaby. So when I got this Thanksgiving turkey when I was 5 years old on this piece of paper, I colored it purple. And I was so proud of it. And then I showed it to some of the kids at my table, and they said that turkeys aren't purple and that was bad. And I started crying and really, really, really bad. Mm-hmm. And then my kindergarten teacher, Ms. Kaur, said, "Why are you crying?" I said, "Because my turkey is purple and it's no good." She's like, "Are you kidding me? That's the most beautiful purple turkey I've ever seen in my whole life."
That's a great teacher.
So that's my story.
Yes. And actually, if I remember correctly, one of our daughters, I can't remember who, but they had to do the same thing. They had to color George Washington. And they colored George Washington's hair like something crazy, like purple. Like, who knows? None of us know what color George Washington's hair really was.
Yes.
You know, we don't really have a ton of photos, more drawings than anything. And anyway, but one of my daughters drew the hair wrong, and the teacher unfortunately came over and said, "That's not the right hair color." So, you know, focusing on those things. But we had to have big talks about that, you know, that's fine, that the teacher felt that she wanted it to be an accurate depiction, but that sometimes when we're doing art, we just get to kind of play. And if we want George Washington's hair to be purple, that's fine. But sometimes those are kind of those fine lines between, like, of course, we want kids to learn something and understand something. It's not like everything's a free for all, but there are times when we can loosen up and have a purple turkey occasionally. Yeah. And you know, I'm going to say this because I had a client come in a couple weeks ago that I was talking to her about this, and she kept bringing up her son's homework, and she kept bringing up what he was doing and wasn't doing. And I finally said to her, you know, you don't need to be your child's teacher. You get to be your child's mom. Mm. And she started to cry. And I didn't mean it to be like super impactful. That wasn't my intention, but I realized that I think she believed that not only did she need to be his mom, but that she had to, when he got home, teach him and do the homework and get, like, she had this thing in her head that she also had to make sure. And again, we all have a little of that, you know, we all want to make sure our kids do well in school, but at the same time, it's really not, that's not our role. Our role is to support them in their educational understanding, rather than when they come home say, "Okay, now you had your teacher all day, now you got me and I'm going to teach you all night." You know, like, they kind of need a break from that. So anyway, that's different than this question. So I love everything that Todd said, and you know, it's very, very typical. But at the same time, I think one of the things that's interesting is I'm going to really dissect this, and because we talk a lot about validating kids' feelings, and I think one step in the validation that we sometimes forget is validating feelings isn't there. There's like this thing in it where a lot of times we'll say, "Oh, it's okay to feel angry, it's okay to feel sad," but are we really believing that? Or are we just trying to say the
right
thing?
Or is it only okay for them to express anger when we're ready for them to express anger?
Yes.
Versus,
we just had to talk about this. Yeah.
Versus when we're walking out the door late and all of a sudden they get angry and they say, why are you angry? You know, it's like a mixed message.
It's a mixed message. And again, we're not going to do this perfectly. But kids are a lot more energetic. And when we come to them with words and we say, "Oh, it's okay to be angry. It's okay to be sad." Sometimes we really don't believe it. We're just saying the right thing. And that's why everything comes down to self-awareness and you know, the best predictor of your child's well-being is a parent's self-understanding. The reason why that's important is because even if you're saying the perfect thing that every author said to say, that every podcaster said to say, that every therapist said to say, if you don't believe it, it doesn't land. You guys probably have had that experience in a million other ways. But so my advice is that when we're saying, "Oh, yeah, I understand. Oh, yeah, that is a bummer," is to really not necessarily. Todd said this great thing on the show this week, or he played something where being there for someone or being empathetic doesn't mean that you're endorsing their behavior. I don't know if you guys listened to that, the podcast from this week, but I loved that because it's such great language for something I always have a hard time explaining. Is empathizing with your child while they're struggling doesn't mean you think they should be struggling.
Right.
It's not like an endorsement of rubber stamp. Yep, you're struggling at the right time. It's you're struggling, therefore I will show up for you, regardless of what it's about. This isn't about I will show up for you if I think it's worthy of struggling.
Right.
There's a big difference there. And then the last thing I will say, and then I know Todd has something to say again, is that when she says, I want her to be confident in her mistakes, here's my big question for everybody. Who's confident in their mistakes? It's kind of a, what's the when things contradict each other?
Paradox?
Yeah.
Oxymoron?
Oxymoron. Like, we're never going to make our kids confident in their mistakes. We're going to help them feel their mistakes. We're going to help them be able to handle the feeling that comes when we make a mistake. Very rarely do we make a mistake and go, I'm confident in that mm-hmm. mistake. And I think that's what sometimes we're trying to teach our kids, to have no emotional expression, to be like, you made a mistake, no big deal, go on. When you guys make a mistake, doesn't you have a feeling. You, that's why it's a mistake. You're like, ah, you know, I drew outside the lines, or I totally dropped the ball on that person today, or I forgot to pick up my kid. I did that once. You know, like, and you have a feeling that comes. And so I think sometimes it's that old school thing where we're trying to bypass that feeling. We're like saying to our kid, just be confident in that mistake. That's not realistic. And I say that not as a criticism to whoever.
And we're not doing that. We're not confident when we
That's
make
what
mistakes.
I mean. Yeah, we're not.
All right,
yeah.
We're going to go over to Kelly C. I'm going to unmute her.
Okay.
And Kelly C's daughter. Hi.
Hi, Kelly.
Hi.
Who do you have with you?
This is Quinn.
Hi, Quinn.
Hi, Quinn.
We know your mom. Yes.
So I was going to say, I had a moment at work that was kind of an aha moment for me about this. I am not a perfectionist. And I was raised in a family of perfectionists. And I even have done work with a coach about accepting and appreciating that my process is messy, because I've always felt like that was wrong. And I was talking to a coworker and I said something, I didn't choose the best language, but it was a great point for him to make with me. I said something about, because this one is a perfectionist, wanting to help her not be one. And he said, well, isn't it your job really just to help her cope with that? And that was a great aha for me, because it's like, I don't want to put her in the same position that I felt like I was in, where I didn't feel like it was okay to not be a perfectionist. So it was just only a couple weeks ago, so I haven't really done much research and figuring out of like how to embrace that difference. But it was a great aha for me of like, okay, yeah, I need to be okay with the fact that she is, even if I'm not. And I agree, it's about teaching to be okay, or to know mistakes happen, and how do we move on from it?
Yes, Kelly, thank you. That's exact. That I love that language. How to? It's not saying don't be that way, and it's not saying you're doing something wrong by being that way. Nor are we saying stop feeling that way. Like one part of Brené Brown's Wholehearted Parenting Manifesto, my favorite line of it is, you know, and again I'm paraphrasing, but it's something to the effect of, you know, we're going to feel, you know, I'm going to allow you to feel, and I'm going to help you feel it. Like, instead of the feeling comes up and I'm going to tell you why you shouldn't feel it, I'm going to help you feel it and sit in it and understand it. Because the problems we run into, and this is not just kids, this is adults, is when we feel things and we want to run, or we feel something and we feel ashamed. Or we feel something and we think we shouldn't be. If it be, you know, I love Kelly's example, because here she's thinking, you know, I'm actually going to work with a coach because I feel like my process is too messy. And then her family is perfectionist. And so on both sides of the equation, we think we're wrong. It's like we can never be right. It's a grass is always greener thing. And so how do we feel our experiences and sit with it, not sit in it? That's a different thing. That's where we get stuck in it. But, you know, right at this moment, I feel sad. It's okay to feel this way. I have a reason for feeling this way that is being seen and validated. That allows adults and children to then let it go. That gives us space to let it go.
Yeah, and sometimes what's that statistic that Jill Bolte Taylor said in her TED Talk, that an emotion runs its course in 90 seconds?
Actually, I think Martha Beck did.
Oh, is it Martha
mm-hmm.
Beck?
90 seconds,
so
yeah.
It, honestly, that sounds a little weird to me, but I'll buy into it just because.
You know, you might be right. Jill Bolte Taylor might have said that too.
Yeah, it doesn't matter. Whatever. Yeah, somebody said it. Mm-hmm. And like, oh, well, how's that possible? Because, you know, I've been stuck on this for 3 weeks or 3 years. And the reason is because you put up a wall to truly allow the feelings to show up. and then to be expressed out.
And feelings become habits. Like, and the thing is that's kind of the work that, and I use the word work on purpose. Like a lot of times when we have habitual thinking, things like gratitude journals and affirmations and, just journaling or meditation are really helpful because we notice the stuck patterns of our thinking. And we can, you know, again, you guys know, you know, our brains are neuroplastic. We have neuroplasticity. So these habits can be changed. You know, the whole idea of, you know, old dog, you can't teach an old dog new tricks is not true at all. Uh-huh. That's not scientifically correct. You can absolutely learn new habits and understand that. I'm not saying that feeling emotion is a habit. I'm saying getting stuck in an emotion can be a habit. Mm-hmm. And it still happens to me all the time. Like this isn't like a thing where I'm like, yeah, 90 seconds and I'm done. You know, that's for like the best of the best of the best. But what the information helps us understand is it doesn't have to be stuck.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like it gives me hope. Like, okay, I'm feeling sad about something. If I can just be with it, if I can just like, and again, what's super helpful is when Todd or a friend or just my own processing can acknowledge it and be like, it's okay that, because I think sometimes we fight the way we feel and we're like, I shouldn't feel this way. Like how often do you guys say that to yourself? I shouldn't feel mad. I shouldn't feel annoyed. I shouldn't feel sad. And why not? Why can't you? Because whatever's going on with you in that moment, that's the feeling that came up. So I'm not giving you permission to then dump all over everybody about it. It's not a thing like, well, I'm mad, therefore I get to yell at people. That's, you know, we don't practice that. But the shame that we place on ourselves is completely unnecessary, you know?
No.
Let it go. Right now, if we were doing the show, Todd would play the song, Let It Go.
Let it go. Don't want to feel these feelings anymore. Isn't that it?
No.
Oh, I thought that was it. Well, everybody's liking it because they're laughing.
Yeah, no, there's
especially Quinn. Quinn liked that a lot. And Alyssa's cat liked it a lot too.
Todd loves cats, Alyssa, so.
I know. Cats.
He's very happy about
except
that.
Except some people are allergic to cats.
I know. I suck in that way. I'm allergic to cats.
We're going to Carney next. Hi, Carney.
Hi, guys.
How are you doing tonight?
I'm good, thanks. Just want to say I miss you guys. Miss everybody. And I just want to say hi to Jennifer and Liz. And just from previous Zen Talks, I can totally relate to the relatives without boundaries. And Jennifer with her mom, I have similar situations in my family. So I'm just glad to be here and I miss you guys and glad to be on.
Nice.
So, so something I'm struggling with is my son has a nut allergy. And he's 10 years old, and you know we're really good, very very diligent. We're teaching him how to live in this world and speak up for himself and ask if there's something that he's being served if it has nuts and how to deal with adults that don't necessarily take no for an answer and that kind of thing. And in the news, it was about a month ago, a 15-year-old died from having nuts. She was given a cookie, a Chips Ahoy cookie that had Reese's peanut butter cups in it, and she was at a friend's house. And the scary thing for me was that she was given two EpiPens, which, like, you know, for me it was always like, oh, don't worry, we don't have to stress over this. We have EpiPens, we have Benadryl, we always have them with us, we're careful. And when I heard this, I was just like, oh my gosh, and I just had this like helpless feeling. I can only relate it to like a school shooting, how we all feel. Like I can't imagine, you know, what these parents need, this family's going through. And they even said, you know, how sometimes in a headline they'll quote a parent. And one thing the mom said was, we devoted our lives to keeping her safe from peanuts. And that's how I feel what I've been doing. And she still lost her child. And so then we're having to deal with, you know, do we tell my son, which we did. I don't want to create an anxiety in him, but he's got to know that this can happen. And he didn't want to go to two recent birthday parties that he was invited to because of the nut issue. And these are moms I know well, and they know he has the nut allergy. And one of us usually goes with him to a party, and parents are usually totally fine with it. Daniel's fine with it. And so, you know, we let him not go to the one. And then when it came around for the second one, all his buddies were going to be there. And he's a very laid back kid. He doesn't really stress over things. He's happy go lucky. And so this kind of broke my heart when he was like, no, I don't want to go. And so I said, you know what? I'll text the mom. I'll find out if there's going to be nuts there. I'll be there with you. And we have to live in the real world. As much as I want to put you in a bubble, we just can't. And so, I don't know. I don't really know what my question is, but I'm finding myself. I'm just so upset for this family, and they're in Florida. I'm in New York. We don't even know them, but I just feel so badly for them for what they went through. And, you know, and I just want to be able to help Daniel navigate this world and not have the anxiety of, you know, when we're at someone's house and there's nuts there, you know, how do I help him not get too anxious over the situation? Or when we hear about in the news when someone has passed away, you know, how do I handle that in telling him?
So I'm going to mute you, and this is a wonderful, important question. So thank you for that. I feel like there's two different questions. One is, should I allow my son to not go to a birthday party, because of his fear of,
or it's a piece of it,
And then the other part, I think, is Carney's asking is how do I deal mm-hmm. with this? So there's a few things that I wrote down as you were talking. One is none of us, we're all parents. None of us can keep our kids 100% safe. Every time we get in the car and get on the highway, that is a risk. And we all do it almost every day. So, you know, obviously, Daniel has another set that he has to deal with, but we all have a certain set of, you know, we cannot keep our kids as much as we want to in this bubble to make sure nothing happens. The other, this is in no specific order, but with the news, like Daniel's already aware of these dangers. So I guess I just don't know if I would make sure that he knows of the next kid who had this accident.
I agree.
I don't know how that's helpful. It's actually not, with all due respect to anybody who passed away from this, it's really not newsworthy. It's a really sad story, which gets plastered up against on the local news or CNN or ABC or whatever it is. So I think that if it were my kid, they already know the risks. There's no reason for me to remind them that, hey, a kid died in Florida today. I wonder if there is if there's certain ways to measure, because your sister suffers from a peanut allergy.
She's allergic to a lot of things.
And I don't know if you can measure the degrees of, like if he ate a peanut, like would one kid that has an allergy react differently than another kid? Like, do we know for a fact that if Daniel had a little bit of peanut, then all of a sudden he'd be rushed off to the emergency
room?
Possibly.
There are some that, would he go into, it's called, I think, anaphylactic shock. Has he had the experience yet, Carney, of eating a peanut? Does he know what would happen? Okay. Because that is true. What I will say is that what peanut allergies used to be, it's pretty heightened these days. It doesn't mean it is for every kid. Like my sister, when I was younger, if she would eat a peanut, sometimes she would wait and her face would blow up and her throat would kind of close and we would get her, there weren't EpiPens then. We'd, you know, finally get her to the hospital or whatever, and they'd do what they'd do. Once she got into college, like I remember we were in the same sorority, and the day I was going active or something, she ate a nut, you know, and she went to the emergency room immediately. She knew exactly what to do and she had an EpiPen. I know that there are some kids now who it's heightened, and it was okay, which is Benadryl. So that's great.
So just for
that's good news.
If you're listening to this, Carney just typed up and said he had a nut several years ago and was okay with just Benadryl.
Yeah,
that doesn't mean you ignore and throw all caution to the wind, but that's really important information.
Mm-hmm, that really is. That gives you a good indicator. It's kind of like kids who are allergic to anything like bees or a certain food. Usually they're, you know, those early experiences with it give you an indication of what would happen next time. Not always. I'm not a doctor. This is not like medical information, but typically it doesn't necessarily.
And what's interesting about Carney, I would do the same thing, is we tend to like paint a worst case scenario. That's the way we're hardwired. We're like, well, what if this happened and the EpiPen weren't there or the EpiPen doesn't work? Like, but that's really not the rational response. Like, he had a nut, he got Benadryl, he was okay. Mm-hmm. But yet our brain, our nervous system just goes to this place of like, you know, extreme.
Well,
you know?
From what Carney said, what happened is she felt all right. And then she read a story where an EpiPen didn't work. And then it took the rug out. It was like, I was feeling safe until I heard this story. And you know, it's funny, Carney, because I do that too, where I kind of have this story that keeps me feeling safe. And if that story gets challenged, then I start to kind of lose my mind a little bit about it because think about the way that's the way our brain works. It compartmentalizes. And sometimes we'll say, well, I know exactly what I do in that situation. So I can put that over there. And all of a sudden you had a box where you're like, we have an EpiPen, we're good. And then you read a story and it pulled that story out. The two things I'll say to you, very similar to Todd, is a lot of times, what we'll do is we'll take other people's stories and we'll process it through our own body. Like, what would I do if I was in that situation, or how would I handle it, or how would I feel? And it's really I do it too, but it's a wasted experience, meaning you really don't know the whole story of what went on with that boy. He could have had heart issues. He could have had other allergies. It could have been something else that was involved. He could have been allergic to EpiPens for all you know, meaning you're trying to like take his story and transpose it into your story. And you're trying to say, now this could happen to us. And there's really not a lot of truth there that you got the, like, yeah, his parents did dedicate their lives to keeping him safe and something happened. But that doesn't mean it's kind of like you identify with them, right? You know, you're like, oh, I so get them. So now you're feeling, you're kind of processing their emotion through your body and you don't need to. So it's like someone, you know, I'll just say personally and from all of us, what we'll offer you is stop processing that story. Mm-hmm. And if you feel like, you know, if you feel like, but I feel so much emotion for them, write them a letter and say, I just want you to know I'm thinking about you. Really, I'm being serious. Like, write them a true letter and say, I also have a child with a nut allergy, and I just want you to know that I'm sending my love to you so you can feel like you gave something, but that you didn't take it on. Mm-hmm. There's such a difference. Like, you don't need to take on this story.
Well, what I was going to say is we did the book of the month thing where we did Loving What Is by Byron Katie.
We haven't done another book.
I know.
What's our problem?
But in it, what Kathy just said is the same thing that I think most people say, just stop telling yourself that story. Basically, another way that Byron Katie says is like, because sometimes you say stop doing it, you reinforce it and you give it more energy. What Katie sometimes says is, can you give me a reason why you should keep repeating the story over and over? Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? It like kind of like just changes the lens a little bit. Because sometimes when we say, well, I got to stop doing this, then all of a sudden, you like give it more energy and more power.
Or the simple thing, like, you know, now you feel this fear, like, wow, my son is now more at risk. Mm. Is that true?
Right.
He's
like,
no more
at
risk.
It's like the sharks, you know, when the news is low,
yeah,
we hear about all the shark attacks.
One more thing. I want to agree with Todd. I want to like bring something full circle, because sometimes when there's stories that happen in the news, we'll say to ourselves, we have to tell our kids. You don't. And I'm not saying you keep it from him. I'm not saying you hide it. If he comes to you with a story and says, Mom, talk to me about this, you're all in. Like, if a child comes to us with a story, we have to be able and be willing to talk to them about it. But you don't have to bring him negative stories. Fear doesn't heighten his ability to take care of himself.
No, it's actually to his detriment.
It's to his detriment.
Yeah.
So it's one of those things where, and then a little side note for birthday parties, if he does feel fearful going to birthday parties, one of Skylar's girlfriends who comes over occasionally, her mom just brings her food.
Yeah.
She even brought her this little girl has a nut allergy. So she brings the EpiPen, she brings her food, and she even brings her treat. So then she doesn't even have to worry about me feeding her anything. So that's an option.
So I want to unmute Carney just to see. What do you think, Carney?
Yeah, that's actually something I do too. I do send food along. I guess my reason for telling him was that sometimes we do let our guard down. Sometimes it's like, oh, okay. So it's just nice to sometimes, not, I shouldn't say nice. No, it's not nice. But sometimes we just need that reminder that, you know, this can happen, because we do let our guard down sometimes, you know, and you hit the nail on the head with, yeah, I had my little story and my attempt to control this situation we have to deal with is that we'll always have the Benadryl and the EpiPen with us. That's so now I can sleep at night knowing that, and I'm controlling the situation and we're good. And then, like you said, yeah, everything changed. So, but thank you. That's great.
Thank you. Carney.
Thank you, Carney.
Really appreciate it. We're going to move over to Kate. Hi, Kate. I can't hear you. Try your, what should we do here? If you go to the microphone and click on select a microphone. So there's a microphone in your lower left-hand corner. There's a drop up arrow. Oh, I think you just pulled up. Can you say something?
Yeah, I think we hear you say.
Hello, can you hear me?
Yes, I
can
hear
you. Can you speak louder into the mic, because it's really hard though.
I'm not really sure where my mic is on my laptop, so I'll
just. Okay.
We can hear you.
Okay. I guess I'll just kind of keep it general, and then if you need more information, that's fine. But just kind of had a question about closure, and because you can only fix yourself, and there we go.
Go ahead and cry. It's a good place to do it.
When you're in those situations where you know you're not going to get what you need from another person or another party, what are some things you can do to kind of like get to your own closure?
Yes, great question. Great question. And you don't even have to get more specific, because I think everybody's felt what you're feeling. Mm-hmm. Okay.
Yep. I have one really quick answer.
Sure. Go ahead.
I haven't even read the book, but you say it's one of the best books ever. It's about grief. Broken Open.
Oh, yes.
What is that?
Elizabeth Lesser's book, Broken Open.
And I don't know if that will help you or not, but that's the first book that popped into my mind, because obviously Kate is struggling with something.
Getting closure.
Getting closure on a relationship, it sounds like.
And I'm not going to speak for, I don't know what it is that Kate has experienced specifically, but sometimes when we know we're not going to get something from someone, if it be an apology or recognition or an honest answer, then it makes us feel like we're left holding the bag.
Okay, so before you get your chance to answer, Alyssa asked, can we summarize the question, because it's hard to hear.
Sure. So the question, everybody, was that Kate was wondering, when you have a situation where you know you're not going to get closure from the other person, meaning like, you know, the examples I just gave, because I think the feeling she's, her story is unique, but the feeling she's having, we've all felt, which is, how do, when we're left holding the feelings and the person that we're dealing with isn't willing either to apologize or to show up or to acknowledge their role, how do we find closure? How do we figure out how to allow that to be and find peace within it? So, and again, if there's anything I missed, Kate, just type it or, you know, say it. But I would say, I don't have like an easy answer, because I think closure is a process. And I think it's interesting that I think Todd used the word grief, and there is grief in it. Because when people fail to understand either how we're feeling or fail to take responsibility for their part of whatever's going on, it's painful. You know, like, kind of like what I was saying before about how we have to learn how to feel it, which Kate is doing a good job, because she's having tears, which is one of the best things you can do.
One quick interjection. Mm-hmm. I'm going to unmute Kate one more time. You say it's not about a relationship, Kate. Would you care to, I want to be able to direct the advice a little bit more specifically. Can you share any more?
Yeah, absolutely. It was more work-based, in that I made a very unpopular decision, and I was ostracized for it for a very long time. Mm. And I'm recently finally in a different location, so that's good. But, you know, looking back, and I'm, you know, trying to look toward the future and stay positive, but at the same time, there's that gnawing, like, but that was wrong. So.
Yes.
So, so for those of you who couldn't hear that, it sounds to me like Kate made an unpopular decision, and, some people didn't ostracize her as a result of it. And she's questioning whether or not she made the right choice, or
she got moved, but she's still holding on to how unfair it was.
Okay. All right.
Yeah. You know what? I struggle so much with unfairness, Kate. I mean, I honestly, like, I can't tell you how much I say to Todd, how does someone get away with that? Or how does someone do that? Or how does someone say that to me and be okay with that? I feel like I say something to that effect almost on a daily basis. And he'll say, you ask me that all the time. But I mean it. And my mom used to say this to me a lot when I was young too. I'm way into fairness and justice. Like I just don't, you know, when someone does something wrong or does harm to somebody, I just believe that it's not okay. You know, like it's hard for me to sit with it. And you're the one who was on the receiving end of, you know, it being unfair. And I guess the first thing that I would say to you, and it just like I would say to anybody, is it's okay to be angry for a while about it. Like you don't have to get over it. Like there's not like a timeline where it's like, okay, you've been moved, you know, you're in a different place, get over it, which is probably the language you're hearing in your head. Like, anger doesn't mean you're going to lash out or hurt someone or hit someone. Anger just means you know your boundaries were crossed, right? Like, that's really what I think anger teaches us, is like, someone crossed the boundary with me, if it be by the way they engaged me or the way that they blamed me or the way that they ostracized me. It was unfair. And even just accepting I'm angry, and even though it's so unbecoming to all of us, it is what it is. And then remembering that underneath anger is embarrassment and sadness and questioning and, you know, recycling that moment or that day, and that, you know, to have feelings about it and to, you know, release those feelings or to like, the thing that I think is most important, Kate, which I think it is for me, I don't know if you're an external processor or not, but, and I hope you get this from us in this group in this moment, is just saying to you, it wasn't fair. You know, like just agreeing with you, like, I don't even know the story. I don't need to know, because you know that you weren't heard. And even if I'm not saying what's right or wrong, I'm just saying that it didn't feel fair.
Sweetie, she's an ISFP. I don't know what that means.
That's her personality type. So yeah. ISFP is, see, I'm an INFP. No, yeah, I'm an INFP. So S, what is S? I'm N. What's S, Kate?
I think S is super awesome.
No.
Sensing.
Sensing. Got it. Okay. Absolutely. So you're going to experience this, maybe differently than some people would, but not worse, not wrong.
So she's a feeler. Is that what that means?
Yeah, for sure. That's what the F is.
Okay.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. She's like, hello. And so you can come on in, Jace. You might need to open the door for it, Toddy. So that's part of it too, is instead of I should be doing this differently or I'm doing it wrong, just the fact that you know your personality type and this is the way you experience things. There's almost like a, yep, here I go. Not here I go like I'm doing it wrong, but like, yep, this is what I do. This is my process.
Well, and her feeling is, it's part of her character.
Amen.
It's part of her strength.
Exactly.
I don't know if this will make sense, but I'm a little bit more emotionally level, not many ups, not many downs. And I used to feel bad about that, like I should be different, when in fact that part of me is a part of our strength as a marriage, as a family. Like, I can kind of hold the ship steady when things are rocking.
And I'm like you, like everything affects me. Everything, I feel everything. I feel, you know, even going back to Carney's situation and her story, I feel everybody's stuff and I try and process it through my own body all the time. And I feel injustice and unfairness and it sucks sometimes. It's overwhelming, but it's also your superpower. And it's also the reason that in this new location that you're in, that you're going to, whatever you're doing, you're going to understand people and relate to people. And, you know, you have the ability to do what a lot of people don't do, or can't do. So it is just a moment in time. And this is, you have every right to feel what you feel. And it is a version of grief. You know, I actually have throw all these books on you guys, but one of my favorite books about grief, it's called, it's by Megan Devine, and it's called It's Okay to Not Be Okay. Mm. How's that for a title? It's okay to not be okay.
Very powerful. Is this the website that you did?
Uh-huh.
So there's a website, and I'll put it in the chat notes, 16personalities.com. Did I do this test?
Yes, you did.
Oh.
And we were quite opposite.
Imagine that.
But yeah, well, everybody should take their test.
It's
and we should
free.
Talk
I think
about
you,
it.
I think you just have to give up your email address.
Mm-hmm.
It's funny. I've been looking at the Richard Rohr thing, the Enneagram.
The Enneagram, yeah.
So there's so many different personality tests out there, and some are like really business focused, and others are more like, I don't know.
And they all affect every aspect of our lives. And I actually on Facebook, I liked a page. It's an INFP page on Facebook. So I get in my newsfeed like things that INFPs write and like quotes and funny memes. And it just makes me feel like, okay, yeah, I'm not the only one who's this, you know, this feeler type.
Sweetie, Kate's already read the Megan Devine book.
Oh, you have? Good. I'm glad. I pick up that book occasionally and just like open to a chapter because I forget. You know, like it's just okay. Like in some of the things that she says, because I think about her story and, you know, when people would tell her how to feel, or you should, you know, it's been a long time. You should be past this by now, or everyone's got their own timeline. And so, Kate, I don't have any magic answers for you. I really don't. Like, I wouldn't even pretend to have one. But I just want you to know that you're not alone, that I'm very similar, and the way I process emotion is very similar. And I'm sorry that they were ostracizing to you. I mean, like, just human to human, like, it sucks. And it sucks that you're left feeling like you're holding the bag, because that's not fun.
I'm going to copy and paste another. You just said I should be past this by now, and it reminded me of that awesome Jeff Foster clip.
Yeah.
So I'm going to put this in the chat in the show notes. It's Jeff Foster, who's one of my favorite teachers of all time. He's written not many books, just a few books, but his message is so wonderful and from a place of non-ego.
Totally. He's so like, he's so refreshing.
Yes. So there's like an 8.5 minute clip of this woman who's like pouring her heart out and sad. And he just kind of, and I actually played this in a clip on the podcast too. Anyway, it's just another resource for you guys to kind of pull from.
And then on the Facebook page, you guys, like if you have any experience with this, or you have something you want to say to Kate, put it on the Facebook page, because sometimes you might think of something later tonight, like, oh, I, you know, and just put it there where she can find it, or where we can find it and we can tag her. I think that, you know, we've all, when I say we've all been there, I don't mean that your experience isn't unique, but that feeling you're having,
We have all been there.
I don't like that feeling.
Yeah. So anyways, all right. So I'm going to read another question with the hopes that we can get another question from somebody else live.
Okay.
7:47. My 12-year-old hates vacations. We talked a little bit about this.
Yeah, I was going to say we did this on Facebook,
didn't
we? On
Facebook, but I want to give it a little bit more. My 12-year-old hates vacations. He hates missing school and his other activities. He hates crowds and all things tourists. He's not fond of the airplane. We were in Maryland last week and head to California next month for lacrosse. The whole family is going on these types of trips, and we just get one extra day to see the sights at these locations. He loves lacrosse and would do anything to continue playing. The team is a huge time and money commitment, but totally worth it to see him doing what he loves. Part of me feels bad forcing. So what happened in Washington, D.C. is they, because they were there, wanted to go see the Lincoln Memorial, and the kid, the 12-year-old boy, gave him a real hard time saying,
I don't want to do this.
I don't want to do this. I don't like crowds, blah, blah, blah. Part of me feels bad for forcing him to see the Lincoln Memorial. He acts like it's torture. And another part of me thinks that he shouldn't ruin everyone else's vacation time with his complaining. We flew all the way out here just so he can play lacrosse. We should be able to do things other family members want to do. Am I raising a kid that thinks the world revolves around him? Is it too much to expect him to suck it up and vacation as a family? Why don't you start?
Sure. You know, as we said, we kind of discussed this on Facebook, so I don't know if everybody's been there.
Oh, that's Alyssa's question. She's here.
Oh, good.
Okay, good.
Let's see. Where do I want to start with this? It's interesting, because I think what I said on Facebook was it's absolutely okay to let a child know that there is some things we're going to do as a family, and that I totally respect the fact that you don't like crowds, and I totally understand that this is not your thing, but this is kind of what it means to be in a unit or in a community, is sometimes we have to do things. Not all the time. This isn't like, 24/7, we have to be on everybody else's agenda. But there are sometimes, you know, we're here and your sisters really want to see something. And it's not 2 days, it's just one day. And we just want to go do this as a family. Now, here's the piece that's most important. I thought a lot about Debbie Reber's book, Differently Wired and Tilt Parenting, because I think sometimes when we say to our kids, I hear all of your challenges with this, but you need to come be with us as a family, we expect them then to do exactly what everybody else is doing, and we want them to rise up to how we are.
For example, like, look at the Lincoln Memorial, right. Read what's on the plaque, right. Do all that. Like, maybe he's just going to go and sit in the corner, right, and not read the plaque.
Or give him tools, like, I don't know if I wrote this down or not, but say, I know you don't want to go, so what are some things we can do to make sure you can get through this day intact?
Forcing him to smile in the picture.
Yeah, yes, that kind totally. Of stuff. Like saying, you're having a good time, smile. Like, it's a game, you know? We're like, we want them to feel a certain way and they don't. Like, I'm thinking about with my girls, like, you know, my girls have to sit through a lot of performances of each other's.
Yeah.
Or they have to go,
non-negotiable.
It's your viola, it's your sister's viola performance, or we're going to the lacrosse thing, or we're going to the singing thing or the dance thing. And they're pretty used to it. But at the same time, when they're not in the mood or they're feeling tired or whatever, I say, what can we bring? What can we do?
Like, you bring paper for Skyler to play.
I'll bring earphones. And a lot of us will say, well, they shouldn't be wearing earphones. They should do this the way we're doing it. Sometimes we have to do what we need to do to continue on as a unit. And we have to remember the age that they are. We don't need to pound them into being like us. They learn over time through experience and age and maturity and brain development that they're not always going to need those earphones. But right now, to get them that, to help them participate in that day, sometimes we need to use some props. Like, as I'm a yoga teacher and more of a yoga student in the last couple of years, but my one of the things I love to say and to use myself is sometimes when you're going into a position, it's not cheating to use a prop. Sometimes the prop actually helps you get into the position a lot better. Okay. And it's funny because I had a teacher just the other day who was like, we're going to go into tree pose now and don't use your hand. You've got to get out of the habit of using your hand. And I thought, that is the dumbest thing I've ever heard. If I need to use my hand to get into this pose that I really can then open up and balance, that's what's most important. It's not about how, we get very focused on, I'm cheating if I use this, or I'm cheat. Sometimes we need props. Mm-hmm. That was a good yoga analogy.
Yeah. I was with you. So I have two things. One is, talk to him if you try to convince him when he's pissed and not wanting to look at the Lincoln Memorial, you're not going to get very far. But maybe you're at lunch with him the next week saying, hey, buddy, just so you know, I know that this is not your thing, and I know you don't like crowds. But basically catch him when he's in a good place, because when he's pissed, he's defensive. When he's defensive, he's probably not open to learning or opening himself up and doing things. So it's just like husband-wife stuff. The time to talk about something heavy is not when you're in the middle of a fight. It's when times are good. And then the other idea I had is that when he does, let's just say throw a 12-year-old version of a fit, whatever that may look like, what energy are you bringing in that moment? Can you stay calm? Because what his ego wants is a fight. He's fighting. He wants to fight back with somebody. Can you stay calm, cool, and collected during that time? And it is not an easy thing to do, especially vacations. Everybody's tired.
We have this thing in our head where we think vacations are fun. And they're not always fun. They're sometimes hard work. And it's worth it, meaning that we need to get away from – there's so many reasons for vacations. And all of you who have become parents know that vacation meant one thing before, and then you have kids and vacation means something totally different. Doesn't mean it's not enjoyable, but it's not this restful – we're still on. We're still parents. Like, Todd and I are going away tomorrow, just the two of us. That's vacation. It's just us. We're not meeting anybody. We're not going to a wedding. It's just us.
Oh, I forgot to tell you, a couple of my buddies are going to be in town.
Don't say that. No.
I'm just kidding.
I know. We won't be meeting them. But one more thing, because Todd just said, catch them later and tell them that that's right.
Back street,
right, Kate.
Back. All right.
They're back. And actually, they were on James Corden was in Vegas last night with them, and we missed it
oh, no.
by 2 days. But let me finish this up before
right,
you move on.
Go ahead.
Todd just said
something awesome.
We could, like, a week later say, you know, you did a good job, or thanks for coming with us. And I think sometimes even when they're in the bad mood and they're sitting there going, I don't want to be here, I sometimes even do the, I know this is hard for you. I know you didn't want to come here. I'm so glad you're here. Mm-hmm. And you may, and again, I think what happens in our parent brain is we'll say they don't deserve that. Mm-hmm. Or if I give that to them, then they're going to think that they can walk all over me. No, everybody, that's not what they're going to think.
Everybody deserves it.
Everybody deserves that love. Everybody deserves that understanding. And when someone gives you that understanding, do you tighten and say, I'm going to fight more, or do you relax?
Open up.
And this is like, these are the parenting things in our head that
this
we've got to.
This is the hard work.
This is the hard work, because we've got ingrained in our head that we need to use fear, and that we need to use power, and that we need to train our kids, and we need to, and this is not, parenting is not a different thing than other relationships. Mm-hmm. Relationship is relationship, whether it's with him or my friends or my children or my aunt or
Kate's
my mom
coworkers.
Or Kate's coworker. It's relationship is relationship. And if you're pissed, what do you want most from your parents? Because you're not saying it's okay that you're ruining our day. You're not saying that. You're saying, I know you didn't want to be here. I'm just glad you're here. Because don't, and you may say, no, I'm not, because he's a jerk. But in your heart, you're glad your kid's there.
Yeah.
So these are, and this is why I've said it twice already, our tagline, the best predictor of a child's well-being is a parent's self-understanding. Because they're just doing their thing. And it's how we show up in those moments of them doing their thing.
That's the essence of everything.
And saying that to my child is not passive. That's pretty damn strong.
Well, and to kind of go along with what Kathy is saying, because one thing Alyssa said to me in the chat was, I mostly just wanted to hear that it's okay to expect him to participate.
Sure.
Absolutely.
Of course.
And I say this phrase a lot jokingly, sometimes you got to drop the hammer where there is no choice. You're doing your homework after school. You are going to your sister's viola thing.
But let me push back.
Okay. I'm not done.
All right, go.
What I mean is, when drop the hammer, drop it nicely.
Okay, thank you.
So drop the hammer is like kind of my funny way of saying, you know, sorry, buddy, this is just the way it's going to be.
Okay.
So there are no options, but you can explain that there's no options with love in your voice.
And explain that the options are that there, you are going on vacation, but there are options within that, which is bring a pencil, bring your book, and don't be annoyed if he's reading his book instead of looking at the Lincoln Memorial, and he can wear his earphones. Like, give him options within the non-option. Mm-hmm. That's kind of the thing.
That's good.
Like, for example, like Todd said, our girls have grown up knowing that when they come home from school, they do their homework first. I don't care where you do it. And I don't care if you do it with earphones on. A lot of parents get upset about that. Like, they need to be focusing. My children tell me they can focus better with earphones. So what am I, you know, that's fine.
The way I do my homework, I wanted to be alone in a room without distraction.
And our kids don't.
And especially JC. She wants to be around people. It's mm-hmm. weird. But she does, and she does well.
She does well.
And who am I to tell her brain how it's better or worse at processing? But we as parents think we always know better, which sometimes we do, but most of the time, I don't know if we do.
We say, do it like I did it. Mm-hmm. Do it like I was forced, or do it like this book says, instead of letting them figure it out. Mm-hmm. And, you know, there are times, like one of my daughters, she'll study after school, but then when she's studying for a test, she wants to do it right before bed, because then she kind of feels like it gets ingrained. And I used to a little bit push back on that, but not anymore, because she does well.
Yeah.
What am I? Who am I?
Things are going good.
It's getting to be 8.
Because
HQ Live is so coming on.
They don't know what HQ Live is.
Does anyone do HQ Live? Raise your hand.
No, nobody does it. Look at all the looks on their faces.
I am going to send something to you guys in the next email. It's an app. It's called HQ Live. And every night at 8 o'clock, they do a trivia contest and you can win money. They do 12 questions. I have gotten to 7.
You got to get 12 in a row. It's multiple choice.
I can't. But what's fun about it is it's not that I really – because – so many people win money, like they'll put out $5,000 and so many people win that you get $1.30. It's not like about the money. The thrill is when I get the push notification that it's almost time to start. I get excited. Hey, Skylar, HQ Live in 3 minutes. The hose did spray you.
The hose
you're all wet.
You.
Do you want to come around and say hi before everybody goes away?
Yeah,
Skylar
show everybody.
Skylar was watering the flowers and she got wet. Aww.
You don't look wet.
Sucks to get wet.
No, it's fun to get wet.
Oh, it's fun to get wet.
Yeah.
No, because I didn't mean to get
She didn't mean to get wet.
Well, maybe I'll spray you with the hose later. Will that help?
No. HQ Live? We're going to win $1.30?
So the thing about HQ Live is like literally like 500,000 people are doing this live at the same time.
Like 800,000 people at the same time.
And when you miss the question, when somebody misses after the first question, they'll say, you just eliminated 50,000 people. And then that was a hard question. So 150,000 people. So then you get down to like 20,000 people. It's kind of crazy.
And so now it's live and you have to wait for them to start. Oh, it's going to start. It's going to count down. So I get so excited.
It starts in 2 minutes, but sometimes you could put these little, like everybody, people from around the world are doing this.
Yeah, we put things in there.
You, put in like, right you type in Zen Parenting Radio, and Zen Parenting Radio will go up to 500,000 people.
But nobody sees it because I get really excited. And then this, so it's really just.
It's for 1 second.
It's 1 minute.
1 minute.
Ready?
There it goes. No. All right, we should let these people go because they might want to go do HQ.
They might be
live.
Bored.
Yeah, okay.
All right, turn that down. It's hurting
okay.
my ears.
So turn it down so we can say goodbye.
Thank you.
All right, so everybody, thanks for coming on 7 o'clock.
Next Zen Talk, I think, is going to be Friday, August 17th at noon. But as always, we want to hear feedback from you guys.
We'll email you all this stuff.
Email you all the stuff. And have a happy few weeks. Get on Facebook. We'll be on Facebook, sort of.
Yep.
Or a lot. I don't know. Whatever.
Hey, Skylar, that's Peggy.
Say hi to Peggy Bear.
Hi, Peggy.
So, and just deep gratitude for you guys being on the team. And we love you. And keep trucking. Adios.
Bye, everybody. All right.